Perfect.
Scott Bolahan, welcome to the Bookshelf Conversations.
Thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I have to admit ignorance. I usually am pretty up on these things, but your new entity, the Twin Bill, has been around for a few years. Could you explain what the Twin Bill is and how it came to be?
Yeah, sure. So the Twin Bill is a literary baseball journal. We publish poetry, short stories, essays, interviews, and tons of artwork. We were founded in 2020 during the pandemic. I think like a lot of people, as soon as the pandemic hit, I immediately was drawn to baseball. It was sort of like my comfort thing. And so we fled New York City, my now wife and I, and we moved to the Berkshires where her parents were. And the first thing I did is I sat down, I put on Ken Burns Baseball, and I watched the whole thing, front to back. My wife now was not pleased about that. She's like, "Can we just watch anything else?" And I was like, "No, I really need this right now." And I finished that and I thought, man, I wish there was a place where people could share their love of baseball in different ways. I have a creative writing background. I tried to write a baseball novel. And I wished that there was just an accessible place where people could just do something like that. And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to do any of this kind of stuff. But luckily, the pandemic was there, so I had just hours to sit down and learn how to build a website. I recruited editors and I figured out how to get the word out a little bit, not well enough apparently, but a little bit. And we just kind of kept growing and growing and growing. And it's just been incredible to see just the diversity of people from around the world who are interested in writing about a sport that is usually considered, America's pastime. And I really think it's kind of grown to become more sport of the world than people really give it credit for.
I'm thinking of the Pandemic Baseball Book Club was founded during that period to give authors who would not have who would normally have a chance to go promote their books with tours and events and whatnot, who obviously couldn't. Unfortunately, that is no longer in business. I'm glad to see you're still in business.
Jason Turbo, in fact, was our very first guest we had because I thought that was such an incredible thing that he was doing. He was our first interview we ever published about his book about Fernando Mania and the Dodgers in the 1980s. Incredible. And I think that was a big inspiration for us to see him go out and be like, yes, we need to do something here. We need to help bring these people together, create this sort of community. And he did such a great job. It's a shame it's not there. We have since started a podcast where we now interview authors. We're essentially trying to steal his idea, more or less, and you try to carry that on because I think it is a really important thing. And there are just so many good baseball books out there that people just have no idea. As you probably know too, that there's an infinite amount of baseball books in the world, and every year I think we had what 30 people on. It's incredible how many more I didn't even get to. I mean, reading all these books, again, as I'm sure you know, it takes time. It's something I love doing, but man, I wish we could give a platform. I wish we could help raise awareness of all the great stuff happening in the world. And I think that's really what the Twin Bill was originally trying to do, and we just kind of kept growing from there.
Well, you are doing that. In fact, again, excuse me, you have a podcast component to your site. And yesterday I listened to the Ed Crane Pool interview and the gentleman who wrote the recent book about Ray Chapman.
That was
And
great. Yeah, that was a really
those
great
are
book.
the Chapman book, especially, that's the type of book, since it is something that happened 100 years ago or so, that is not getting, the publicity that a book by a larger publishing house might get. One of the things that well, let me ask you this. You have poetry, you have fiction. What is creative nonfiction?
That's a great question, and I'm sure someone could give you a better answer. I would think of it as more of an essay, but I think that the idea is we don't necessarily want the academic essays. It's almost more like a personal essay, where you kind of tell more of a story as opposed to analyzing a player from 1947 and just kind of going into their stats and writing about that. I think the thing with the twin bill, and this is the thing that it can be kind of hard for some of the writers to grasp at first, is that I want your story. I want baseball to be in it. That is a huge part of it. Obviously, we're a baseball literary journal. But I'm interested in you and your baseball story. I always think you go to a baseball game, and there's 40,000 people there. There's one game going on, but each person there has this different experience, experiencing the same thing that everyone else is experiencing, but it's a different story. And I've realized, especially working on this anthology, is that it's the stories of baseball that I really love. I still play. I go to probably 30 games a year still. But the thing that really attracts me to baseball and keeps me coming back, it is these stories, how it can connect to the past, to today, the stories of the players, the stories of the people watching. And so being able to create this place where there are stories, this creative nonfiction, for people to share them, I went back and I read the creative nonfiction stories in the anthology this week. They're really good and they're just so different. And I'm always impressed by that. But yeah, I think that's kind of what a microcosm of what we're trying to do there is essentially the creative nonfiction.
And I should just mention that the anthology you're talking about is the Twin Bill Early Innings, which is a collection of a lot of these stories. And the artwork is amazing that I see there. And you have contributed a lot of the artwork yourself. You're multi-talented in being able to do the writing and the podcasting and the artwork. And that's quite an accomplishment.
Well, I'm certainly not as talented as the illustrators that we highlighted. One of the things when putting together the anthology is I really wanted to make sure that none of my stuff was in there because I think that it was just an opportunity to showcase all these other incredible artists out there. There's a lot of lit mags in the world. I don't think anywhere offers a place where if you get published, not only are we going to pay you're going to get a full illustration, a completely brand new illustration to go along with your piece. And so unfortunately, as you know, I'm putting together the anthology, I wanted to include so many things. We stopped around 200 pages. My first draft was about 300 or so, and I priced it out. It's going to cost like $100 for a book with these
Wow.
full color, yeah, these full color page, high premium paper. I had no idea. But the illustrations are such a part of what we do. In many ways, they tell their own stories, I think. I'm very loose with talking to the illustrators about what they can do. I give them the piece. I don't try to give them that much direction because I'm always surprised with what they come up with. One of my favorite illustrations is there's a we have a shirtless Henry David Thoreau swinging a baseball bat in Walden Pond, which I'm just like, this is such a I in a million years, I never would have thought about that. And that's probably the one that we get the most comments about. And I think that one of the things, especially in writing and with baseball, people kind of forget sometimes that it's fun. Baseball and writing, it's fun. I mean, baseball can be a very serious topic, but I think the initial thing that drew everybody to baseball is that it is fun. So when we do get something a little quirkier, I'm always very drawn to that, and I think that's a great example of something like that.
Well, I think, sorry, I think your publication allows for that quirk that would not be available in a lot of other situations. Tell me about the daunting prospect of putting together something like this anthology.
I would wish it on nobody. It is truly, again, very similar to when I started the Twin Bill. I was like, oh, I can do this thing. This isn't going to be too hard. I was very lucky, again, sort of similar to how we got started. I had shoulder surgery right before Thanksgiving, and I've been in Michigan at my parents' house. I'm looking out at the snow-covered front yard right now, It gave me the time in order to really sit down and focus on something like this. And the easy part is making the selections. And that probably took me weeks to do. It's the formatting. I didn't realize I was going to have to format everything for different the Kindle versus the hardcover versus the paperback. the colors, CMYK, this is all stuff that didn't even cross my mind. And so I sent yesterday, we're about a month before the publication comes out. I finally sent the final proofs off yesterday, so that's done. But I would say, I hope my bosses aren't listening. I've worked a lot harder on this than I have on pretty much anything else for the last 3 months. It has just consumed my life, where I am up at night readjusting, little tweaks here and there, trying to make it all work. I've learned so much about formatting and Microsoft Word, which is something I wish on nobody, because it is just a miserable process. But I'm so proud of the outcome and the people who have seen it so far. I sent it off to Tyler Kepner. Of we had him We interviewed him a couple years back, and I was thinking, he as a kid, he ran his own baseball journal. I was like, you know what, maybe he'll be interested in this might be a thing he'd love. He said he was blown away and he wants to buy copies for his family. And I was like, wow, that makes it all worth it. All these
That's a good
hours.
endorsement.
You can't get much better than that. And it really meant so much, because I think anytime you do something like this, and it's the same for these writers that we talk to, I think there has to be moments of doubt that creep in, where you're like, what is this for? Who's going to read this? Who cares? And you get little pieces of feedback like that, and it just keeps you going. I mean, I'm not in this for the money. There is no money in this. We are a nonprofit. I have made $0. I have lost a lot of money on this. And even this, to keep the cost down, I think we're going to make like $1 or $2 on every issue we sell, which is that's not a good business plan. We would be a Doge cut if there was if that was if that was a thing. But yeah, no, it is not a great business plan. But I think to be able to hold, people love to hold things is the thing. I think that in this digital world, people forget how great it is to have something to hold. And I know the writers are really excited, and it's all for the writers. I realize that we have become, our biggest priority is the writers, I think. We want to create something that we, the editors who are all writers ourselves, would like to be a part of. And I think we've done that. And I know you open it up, you see the big illustration. The illustrators are so excited. They get a whole page of illustrations to see that it's highlighted there. And you see the work. All these hours, staying up until, I was up till 2 last night putting the final touches on. It's all worth it. And I feel really, really good about it. I hope other people besides Tyler Kepner will. So,
When does this actually come out in tangible form?
March 18th, which is the opening day of this baseball season, they were playing those first games in Tokyo. And then I was kind of looking around, and I realized that's also George Plimpton's birthday. And our cover art is of Sid Finch. And I was like, you know what? That's a great little tie-in. One of the most incredible things from the Lit Mag is I have become friendly with the real life Sid Finch, Joe Burton, the guy who's in the Sports Illustrated pictures for all that. And he's just a fascinating guy. We named a we run a contest, and we named our fiction award the Sid Finch Fiction Prize. I reached out to him and I was like, hey, is it okay if we do this? And he said, yeah, that's great. It's just, don't ask me to judge it. But I was like, great, fine. We went to a Cubs game last year. I got a Christmas card from him this year. It's just incredible that these people, especially him, who is a fictional character, but a living fictional character. And then the art by Mark Mosley, it was just maybe my favorite thing we've ever published. It has the French horn kind of incorporated in the background, and it really kind of captures this idea of this fun, quirky, I think, yet serious kind of thing we put together. It captures the fictional element there. You highlight the art. I love it. And so the coincidence of having it on Plimpton's birthday, who has long been a hero of mine, it was too perfect. It's like, great, March 18th, that'll be it. And we'll see from there. I'm hoping all the editors are going to be at AWP in Los Angeles there, and we're going to try to sell some copies there as well. But who knows? I have no expectations. I have no idea what I'm getting myself into here right now. I guess that's been kind of the story of the Twin Bill. So, yeah.
So the what are your plans after this comes out? How soon do you start working on the next anthology, or you
Gosh.
take a little time off and
probably
regroup
50
and
years maybe.
energize.
Well, it's also, gosh, I don't want to get political. It's kind of a coincidence that 4 years happened for the first one. And it's because we figured out how to finally print issues for our regular issues that come out quarterly. And I was like, man, I feel so bad for the people who were published in the issues before that. They don't have a place where they can hold on to their work. And so we ended up with 4 years. I imagine we'll probably do one in four. Maybe I'll push it to make it 10. But it'll be a lot easier because I've already formatted everything for one. I know what I'm doing this time. And we've already formatted everything for print to begin with. So it should just be a copy and a paste and throw it over there. But I can tell you right now that it will not be that simple. Something will come up. I had trouble with the page numbering last night. Just the things you don't even think about. It's like, oh, of course, this is a thing that the writing, the editing, everything's done. It's the page numbers all of a sudden. It's a problem. You never know what's going to come next.
There have been other literary magazines about baseball. They have not lasted. I wish you much better luck with yours. Is that a concern?
Oh,
Like
yeah.
the Pandemic Baseball Club. Granted, it was for the pandemic, but it could still serve a purpose. I guess they figure, well, now the authors don't really need this anymore because they are going back on the road. They are making appearances. But what are you worried about as you move forward?
That is a deep question.
Yeah.
I think probably the biggest thing that would stop this is just life. I mean, again, we're not making any money. We, as a nonprofit, we haven't been able to get grants. We really, people just, it's so niche. It's just, the readership isn't huge, but we get so many submissions. And I think maybe that's sort of a symptom of today's MFA world, which I'm a product of, where everyone wants to write and a whole lot less people want to read. It's a really interesting conundrum. But as long as people keep wanting to be published, as long as they continue to have stories about baseball, I don't see me stopping this anytime soon. I think probably the best thing I did was at the very beginning, I realized I couldn't do it myself. I needed help. And so I brought in the best fiction writer I knew. I brought in the best poetry writer I knew. I brought in the best essayist I knew. And they all became the editors. We've now had a complete turnover of editors because they have lives too. I think that some of their complaints was that they were spending too much time editing and not writing. And I very much understand that problem. I feel I dedicate so much time to this that my own personal writing has kind of gone off to the wayside a little bit. But as long as I still love baseball, which I don't think is changing anytime soon, and as long as people continue to be interested, I'm going to keep it going. I'm very bad at quitting things, is what I've learned. I think that's why I'm still playing baseball today. I'm 38 years old. I had Tommy John surgery. I just had the shoulder surgery from playing baseball still. I'm trying to keep up with these kids in their teens, and I just can't let it go. And I think that's very similar to how I'm going to treat the Twin Bill. Like, yeah, it's not, we're not on getting the press that I thought we would get. We're not getting the recognition yet. I'm hoping that the anthology will kind of help change that. But it's not about that. It's about the writers. And I think that's what I keep coming back to. It's like I was at the National Baseball Poetry Festival,
Which,
and
excuse me, which is something else I didn't know existed until
yeah,
I read
exactly.
your.
Yeah. So, there are all these things out there, and it's just a matter of getting it out there. And I'm hoping that we can kind of be a conduit for some of that. But one of our illustrators, we've published some of his poems, Jeff Brain, just incredible. I love his stuff. His daughter was there, and I was like, oh, she probably thinks this is some silly baseball thing. She came up to me and she said, thank you so much for giving my dad a place where he can celebrate his art and his work. And it's like, huh, that's right. It is a place to celebrate baseball and your own work. So as long as people keep wanting to do that, we're not going to stop anytime soon. It's hard. I know why the other ones have folded. I mean, Spitball is still around and they're going strong, and that is incredible. But they have a very different model than we do. But it's incredible to see what they've been able to do and be able to keep up. And I hope that maybe someday we can approach their longevity. That'd be great.
You mentioned Spitball. Spitball has been around for quite a long time. They've managed to hang on where others have dropped off by the wayside. I just want to talk a little bit about the poetry aspect because I must admit I do not get poetry. I get jazz, but I do not get poetry. I don't know what makes something a good poem. I know you're not the poetry editor, but what makes a good baseball poem?
You sound exactly like me when I started this. In fact, when I originally started this, I didn't feel comfortable in having poetry because I didn't think I could tell what made a good baseball poem. But the problem was we kept getting poetry submissions. We didn't even ask for them. And they're just coming. I think now the thing we are best at is poetry. I really think so. We get so many submissions for poetry. I was shocked. I mean, you talk about something where, poetry has a sort of antiquated kind of connotation to it. I think some of the most lively things we get are the poetry. I've learned, gosh, it's not a great answer. You can tell a good poem when you see it. And I think specifically for baseball, we have a really probably my gosh, I don't want to say a favorite. We've published him the most of all the poets, Michael Gaspenny, and he has this way of writing about the game, and then having this kind of like emotional hook at the end that really kind of brings it together and makes you realize, right, someone else has the same feeling about baseball that I do. Someone else feels the same way. They see the game the same way. I've really come to love poetry. I haven't told anyone this. I am about halfway through. I'm writing a book of Babe Ruth haikus right now. I'm going to write 60 Babe Ruth haikus. I love it. I find it to be just a way to express yourself in a more condensed space. And I think that's so much, maybe even today with the internet world where everybody wants to spend as little time on anything as possible. Maybe it's going to become the relevant form of literature for baseball. We'll see. But no, I love our poetry. I'm very proud of it.
I'm flipping through the PDF version you sent me, and I'm trying to find something in the creative nonfiction that really got to me. Meet the vignettes.
You know what? I love puns. I love humor. And the way that we laid out the book, there was a blank page because I wanted every image to be on the left-hand side. And so sometimes if a piece was 3 pages long, it's like, oh shoot, there's a blank page. What am I going to do with that? It's like, right, I'm going to interview the authors and they're all fascinating. And I was like, what do I call it? It's like interview with whatever. And I was like, oh no, let's have some fun with it. Meet the vignettes. I laughed a lot when I thought of that. My wife was like, yeah, you probably really enjoyed coming up with it. I was like, yeah, that was great. But no, I think that's a great way to get an insight into these writers and how different all their stories are. The very simple questions I asked them, and there's just so many different answers in there.
The one I'm thinking specifically of is the one about Carrie Bowman.
Aha.
That kind of got to me.
Yes. So that was actually from our very first issue. I got this email from Carrie's dad. He said, "Hey, my son wrote this. I think it was, gosh, he might have been in college or he was taking a class." And he's like, "Hey, he passed years ago, probably about 4 years ago when he sent it to me. He always dreamed of being an author. Would you be interested in taking a look at this?" And I said, yeah, sure, of course. I did some editing on it, cleaned it up a little bit. We kind of went back and forth with it. But it's this really lovely story about him and his dad and his greatest moments in baseball of hitting this home run and how he regretted that he didn't let his dad carry him off the field on his shoulders.
This was when he was in Little League. We should
He's oh
mention.
yeah. He was in Little League, yeah. And putting that in the context of what I knew what happened after, I was like, man, this is a really powerful piece. And it just so happened that his dad is also a great writer and wrote this really lovely tribute to his son that ran after him. As I mentioned, the Meet the Vignettes thing, I do these interviews with him, but I wanted him just kind of write about his son. And he came up with this really beautiful, succinct story of his life. It's really moving. It really is. And to be able to offer something like that to the family, I wish Carrie was around to see it. I think he would have been proud. Because it is good. It is really good. That meant a lot to me. That's a really special one that was one of the first times I knew that what we were doing was important when I got that, when I received that piece. It's like, right, someone's trusting the memory of their son to me to put out in the world. I'm getting a little emotional talking about it. Yeah, it was very very meaningful, very important. I'm really glad that you picked that one out because that was a great one. Yeah.
And we've been talking with Scott Bolahan. I'm a little choked up too because it
Yeah.
made me think of my dad
Yeah.
and taking him out to his. He was an immigrant from Russia, came over in the early 1900s and didn't think much of baseball. And when I was a teenager, the milk cartons had little coupons on, and if you saved up enough of them, you get a free ticket to a game. So I took my father on Father's Day to his first baseball game, and he didn't understand the game at all, but I think he was just happy to be there with his son.
I think that's the thing about doing this is that whether you realize it or not, you have a baseball story. It is so ingrained in the American experience. Everyone has one. And I encourage everyone to try to write it down, remember it, savor it. Send it to us if you want. But write it down, keep it. Your kids or your grandkids or people are going to be interested in that story someday.
And
And yeah.
if people want to do that, how do they go about it?
Sure. So we do our submissions are all unsubmittable, but you can find all the submission guidelines on the twinbill.com. We publish quarterly. So we have, gosh, I can't believe you have another issue coming out opening day. So I think submissions for this window close Friday, but then we open back up immediately for the All-Star game. So we publish opening day, All-Star game, World Series, and then we have our contest held every year on the birthday of Jackie Robinson, Ernie Banks, and Nolan Ryan. So that's January 31st.
And I want to point out that also on the site, you can get little things like this.
Yes, like your Twin Bill mug. Yeah, that's incredible. I'm a huge coffee man. I have one in the other room. I thought it was really important to have it be a bigger mug because I like getting a lot of coffee at once. So I'm glad
This
you're
is a
enjoying it.
fine size. This is without getting too over-caffeinated. Well, Scott, thank you very much for talking with us today. It's been a pleasure. I wish you all the luck in the world. And looking forward to seeing more of your stuff.
Thanks so much, Ron. It's been an absolute pleasure.